TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. From Monsanto versus Percy Schmeiser to Percy Schmeiser versus Monsanto. The most famous lawsuit in which the agrochemical giant Monsanto sued a family farmer and seed saver whose canola crop was contaminated by their genetically engineered seed. Initially, Monsanto won in federal court in Canada, but Schmeiser fought back for 10 long years. Here is his story, told by himself in his own words, after an introduction. In early summer of 1997, the Canadian power company in Bruno, Saskatchewan, sprayed the herbicide Roundup at the base of their power poles, adjacent to the fields of canola grower Percy Schmeiser. An investigator for Monsanto, the giant multinational agrochemical company, drove down the road a few days later and noticed that some of the plants had not been killed by the herbicide. He brought the plants in for a lab test and found they were Roundup-ready canola, a genetically modified organism engineered and patented by Monsanto. Even though Schmeiser's fields away from the road were free from contamination, and it became clear that the seeds for the plants in the ditch had fallen from a neighbor's truck, Monsanto filed a lawsuit against Percy Schmeiser on August 6, 1998. The Schmeiser case has become one of the most watched and most important cases for organic farmers, seed savers, for the movement against the invasion of the biosphere by genetically modified organisms, and against corporate ownership of life. Canada and the U.S. are the only industrialized countries that place no restrictions on the planting and use of GMOs, and their agricultural trade has already suffered when their exports are being rejected because they contain GMOs. Today, even Monsanto has to admit that its genetically engineered canola, corn, and soy does cross-pollinate over long distances and can become a dominant trait in organic crops and wild relatives, or become a weed along roadsides, in gardens, parks, and cemeteries that is almost impossible to eradicate. Percy Schmeiser says he believes that Monsanto will face huge liability issues down the road. He said, "The court determined that they have ownership to the plant and that I infringed by having it in my field. With ownership comes responsibility, and I assume more lawsuits will be filed against them for the contamination of other farmers' fields." End of quote. I recorded Percy Schmeiser in November 2006 in Ukiah, California. He and his wife of 55 years, Louise, had returned to an area that passed in 2004 a measure making it the first county in the nation to ban the growing of genetically altered crops and animals. Monsanto could not have chosen a more formidable opponent. Here is Percy Schmeiser reporting on his legal battles with Monsanto.
"It's not easy for anyone to stand up to a corporation, and my wife and I really found that out when Monsanto laid a lawsuit against us in 1998 and was a patent infringement lawsuit. As some of you know, I do come from the province of Saskatchewan, the heart of the prairies, and basically in the heart of the grain-growing area of Western Canada. But coming from there, we are also very closely associated with farmers in North Dakota, and also Montana, Idaho, and our neighboring province of Alberta and Saskatchewan. Back there, Louise and I were known for as a seed developer, especially in canola, which we had, when I took the family farm over from my father in 1947, we immediately started growing, canola. At that time, it was known as rapeseed. And if I look back at that time, rapeseed primarily, I would say half my production was for lubricating oil and the other half for cooking oil. It was not good for cooking oil at that time because of the uric acid content, which was very high in rapeseed, and which then the cooking oil was quite bitter. My wife and I were married in 1952. She also came from a farm background, and immediately she started to help develop various varieties of canola. So we were known on the prairies as seed developers and seed savers. Like hundreds of thousands of farmers, we used our seed from year to year. Now, in 1996, a lot of people were not aware of what happened, especially farmers, in regards to what happened when the government of Canada and also the U.S. government gave regulatory approval for the introduction of GMOs, genetic modified organisms. And there were four principal crops that were given regulatory approval at that time, and that was cotton, BT cotton, corn or maize, and soybeans and canola. And if I look back at what people were told at that time, the farmers were told, first of all, increased yields, a bigger yielder, and also that it would be more nutritious, and the third thing, less chemical use. And I think when I talk to farmers, the issue of less chemical use is what really caught the ear, because chemicals are a costly input to farmers, and a lot of farmers realized after half a century, especially since the Second World War, 1947, when they were introduced in our area, the damage it was doing to the environment and also what it was doing to human health. And so that was the beginning, 1996. Now, in 1998, Monsanto laid this lawsuit against my wife and myself, and it was a patent infringement lawsuit. And it was a real surprise when we got this lawsuit, when it was sent to us. And I didn't even take the time really to look at it, because it was right in harvest time that we received this lawsuit. And when we had a little rainy period, I looked at it and I thought, gee, this doesn't look good. And I took it to my lawyer and he says, Percy, I think you're in trouble. And little did we know how much trouble it would be for many years afterwards. And in that lawsuit, it said that we were growing Monsanto's GMO canola without a license from them, and that we had infringed on their patent. And that really concerned us because, as I said at that time, we didn't even know about anything that a gene had been patented and put into a canola seed where they could claim ownership. Also in that lawsuit, they had stated that we probably many had gotten the seed illegally. So we stood up to Monsanto, and to make a long story short, it then went to Federal Court of Canada, because most patent laws come under federal jurisdiction. And so we had no choice of where the case could be heard or would be heard. Federal Court of Canada, one judge. And as I've said many times, how we wish that we could have had a judge and jury with farmers on that knew and understood about farming. But that was not to happen. And in the 2 years of pretrial, Monsanto withdrew all allegations that we had ever obtained a seed illegally, and that didn't matter. The fact that they had found some of their GMO canola plants, not even in our field, but in the ditch alongside of one of our fields. And that was in 1998 when that lawsuit was launched. We had 8 fields seeded to canola in 1998. Amounting to about 1,030 acres. And it was only that it was noticeable in the ditch along one field. So that is where the contamination came from. It came from a neighbor because he grew Monsanto's GMO canola in 1996, the first year that it was introduced, and also another neighbor grew it in 1997. And we never knew that these people or my neighbors had ever grown it until our trial in the year 2000. That's the basis then. Patent infringement, Monsanto claiming it doesn't matter how it gets there, you violate their patent if this happens. Now, there were many things that the trial judge ruled and in his various judgments, but the most important one was where he said it does not matter how Monsanto's GMOs, genetic modified organisms, gets into any farmer's fields or into his soil. And he did go on to say how this could happen. Cross-pollination was one, direct seed movement by seeds blown in the wind, especially transportation by farmers, and also birds, bees, wind, floods, whatever. And he said if that happens, a farmer no longer owns his seeds or plants, they become the ownership of Monsanto. Well, that was really, it was unbelievable, that ruling. And he went on to say that we were not allowed to use our seeds or plants after being we had been working on them and developing them for over 50 years. To give you some examples what we were able to accomplish, there were two major diseases on the prairies in canola, and that was Serotina and blackleg. And we could continuously seed canola in the same land year after year, whereas the companies were saying once every 4 years in the same land. So that was one of the major accomplishments. The judge ruled that all that research and development also goes to Monsanto because of the contamination. Well, that was heartbreaking. He also ruled that all the profit from 1,030 acres, which we had seeded, goes to Monsanto. He also ruled that the level of contamination did not matter. And to give you an example, as I said, we had seeded 1,030 acres in 1998. We used about 9,000 pounds of seed, and it is estimated that the total contamination by Monsanto in our seed supply was from 10 to 15 pounds in 9,000 pounds. And yet, through their patent law, it didn't matter, the judge said, what the rate of contamination was. It all goes to Monsanto. Now, the University of Manitoba at Winnipeg, some of their scientists went and checked all of our eight different fields, and in two fields, they found absolutely no contamination. And what did the judge rule on even those fields? He said because we were seed savers and because we were using our seed from year to year, there was a probability there could be some of Monsanto's GMOs in those fields also. That also becomes the ownership of Monsanto, even on a probability, because we were using our seeds, as I said, from year to year. So that was the trial judge. Then we proceeded on to the Federal Court of Appeal. Now we got three judges. And what did the three judges rule after another 2 years of legal battle? They ruled that although they did not agree with all of the trial judge's decision, they still would uphold it. And normally in court, it should have been thrown out if you don't agree with all of the trial judge's decision, because it could have a real bearing on the results of that trial or the first judge's decision. So what do we have left? 4 years of legal battle, or $300,000 in costs. We had one avenue left, and that's the Supreme Court of Canada. But anyone who loses two trials in a row, it's very unlikely that a Supreme Court will hear the case. And mostly they say the odds are about 10% that the Supreme Court would hear the case. And it was the best news in our life when the Supreme Court ruled in our favor to hear the case. Now, in the Supreme Court, we could also bring up other items besides patent infringement. And some of those other items we could bring up was, first of all, can farmers keep the ancient right of being able to use their seed and develop their own seed from year to year? And there's some other ones, and maybe I should just refer to them. Can living organisms, seeds, plants, genes, and human organs be owned and protected by corporate patents on intellectual property? And then another one, can genetically modified traits invade or become noxious weeds that then become resistant to weed killers? We now have super weeds on the prairies and the northern plains of the U.S. And I'll go into a little later what a super weed is. But the most important one by that time, after 5 years of battle, was that who owns life? Has anyone the right to patent any higher life form, including even a human being? So that's what the Supreme Court had to address. This is what the Supreme Court ruling was. I should also say that in the meantime, about after 4 years of battle, Monsanto laid another lawsuit against us, which a lot of people don't know. And that lawsuit was for $1 million for their court costs up to that time. So we had to fight also a $1 million lawsuit, and also the patent infringement case. So that is what came up before the Supreme Court. Now, if we would have lost, now I should maybe say, what did the Supreme Court rule? They said that on the issue, I did not have to pay Monsanto 1 cent. And Monsanto had wanted license fees, damages, $1 million court cost. And in that $1 million court cost, it was very unusual. They said the reason that they wanted me to pay their court cost is because I was stubborn, I was arrogant, and I wouldn't do what Monsanto wanted. But $1 million battle there. So the Supreme Court ruled I didn't have to pay Monsanto no money. But what was not fair, remember Monsanto laid the lawsuit against us, and they had testified throughout all the trials that it was a test case for them to see how far they could exercise patent infringement law over farmers' rights. So they should have paid all of the court costs because they lost everything that came after me. But the court ruled I pay my costs and they pay their costs. Their costs for legal fees up to that time, disbursements and so on, was around $2 million. Louise's and I, our court cost was around $400,000. Well, believe me, it's a lot easier for a corporation to pay $2 million in for legal fees on a test case versus a farmer standing up for his rights to pay $400,000. So that part was not fair. Now, on the issue of who owns life, can you patent a higher life form? This is what the Supreme Court ruled. Number one, it doesn't matter how Monsanto's genes get into any higher life forms. And if this happens, Monsanto owns and controls that higher life form. Now think about that. Doesn't matter how in one life form from another life form gets into a life form. So that is what the ruling, Monsanto owns and controls that higher life form. So where does it stop now? A bird, a bee, seeds or plants, ultimately even a human being. The Supreme Court went on to say Monsanto owns and controls that higher life form. But in the Supreme Court's wisdom, it's now come home to haunt Monsanto because we now have a liability issue. Because if you own and control a higher life form and you release it into the environment where you cannot control it, they are now liable for the damage that they have done or the harm they have caused. Now, already there are many lawsuits against Monsanto on the liability issue, mostly by the organic farmers of Saskatchewan in a class action lawsuit against Monsanto because of choice being taken away. Organic farmers no longer can grow several crops like soybeans or canola because our total seed supply is now contaminated. What happened after that? Okay, that's the Supreme Court's decision. They also stated that it should go back to the Parliament of Canada, in other words, to the people of Canada, to sort out and pass laws to protect the rights of people and farmers against patent law or patent infringement law, and also who owns life. On May 1st in 2006, Louise and I took our case to the United Nations Human Rights Commission in Geneva. It was a violation of human rights with the introduction of GMOs. And in some of the submission to the Human Rights Commission of the United Nations at Geneva was this. First of all, it was that the violation, a drastic violation of human rights for the average person because we do not have labeling. We don't know what we're eating. We don't know what we're feeding our children or grandchildren. So that's a drastic violation of human rights when you don't know what's in your food. And it stands the same in both our countries. Many countries of the world, including all of the European Union, have labeling. People know what they are eating. There were other issues we brought forward, but the whole issue about who can patent life and so on. To further now, where does it stand again with my relationship to Monsanto? It's not been good. In all this process, they threaten us a lot of times. In fact, at one point before the Supreme Court decision, they tried through liens and caveat, they tried to seize our farm equipment, they tried to seize all of our farmland, they tried to seize our house, and we had to fight every bit of that. They tried to destroy us and take away our ability to put mortgages on our farm, to fight or to pay our legal bills. So what happened? Last year, I should say, we've now rented all our land out except a quarter section, 160 acres, and my wife and I decided to go back and try and do new research in yellow mustard to try and develop a higher yielding yellow mustard. And so last year we had a quarter section of land, but we used 50 acres of it, where in 2005 we grew no crop on it. Cultivation only to maintain and control any weeds that may be grown to try that we could seed yellow mustard in 2006. When I came home from California last October, I went out to the farm, and here I see canola plants growing on this field where there should be nothing growing. And so immediately, with testing, we found out that they were Monsanto's canola plants, GMO plants, growing on a field that should have nothing growing on. We notified Monsanto. They did come out. They checked some of the plants where we had tested. 2 days later, they confirmed it was their GMO canola on our field again. Today yet, we don't know if it was intentionally or unintentionally. So they said to us, what would you want done with this field? And I said, we want all the canola plants removed by hand. And they agreed to that they would do this immediately. But then they said, you have to sign a release form. And I said, what are you talking about? I said, in the Supreme Court, in the Federal Court, Court of Appeal, you never said anything about a release form. You only said that all a farmer has to do, notify you, and you'll come out and remove any offending plants. So it didn't say okay immediately. They said, we will send you the release form. My wife happened to be the first person to look at the message on the fax machine, and when I come in the door, I knew something was wrong because I'd never seen her so angry for a long time. And she said, you won't believe what Monsanto sent us. I said, what is it? So she gives me what the release form is. Here's what was in that release form that they wanted us to sign. Number one, my wife and I, or any members of our family, could never ever take Monsanto to court again for the rest of our life. And secondly, if we had any other contamination in following years, it was our responsibility to remove it or they could fine us for it. And number three, which was really the one that really made us upset, we would have to sign a non-disclosure statement that we could never talk to the press, never talk to our neighbors what the terms of settlement were. So we said, no way. And then Monsanto said, we will not remove the plants. I then, with the help of two neighbors, we removed the plants, 3 truckloads of them. We notified Monsanto when we were finished. I said, your property is on a pile in our field. Come and get it. They said, no, we won't. I said, okay, that gives me 3 choices. I can burn it, or I can load it on a semi and haul it to Saskatoon and dump it on your head office doorstep. And they said, don't you dare. In the meantime, we got a letter from Monsanto's lawyer and said it would be in our best interest not to seed mustard in it in 2006 because of the contamination. So I realized that you cannot separate canola from mustard. And so we didn't seed mustard in that field this year. We seeded wheat and oats. So even our choice of what we could seed was taken away, and them even saying. So the bill came to about $620 that I had to pay my neighbors for helping. So this year, I sent Monsanto a bill, $620. And I got a letter back that they will not pay it because I didn't sign the release. So then I went to small claims court. So then Monsanto was issued a summons for $620, and I'll have them in court. So it's not the issue of the $600. The whole issue now is the liability issue. And if I win that suit against Monsanto, there'll be thousands of farmers that can do the same thing, because in Saskatchewan, you can have an amount up to $10,000 that you can take Monsanto to court. So that it's the whole issue of liability. I should also add, it's not only $620, it's $640 because there's a $20 court fee. So, but it's the issue.
Canadian family farmer Percy Schmeiser turning the tables on Monsanto. And after almost 10 years of hardship, fighting for the survival of his own farm and for farmers' rights to be free from contamination, to grow healthy food and to save their seed from year to year, it was that humble small claims lawsuit that turned the tide. As Percy Schmeiser had predicted, Monsanto's fierce legal battle to assert ownership over their GMO product backfired. On March 19, 2008, Monsanto settled out of court, paying $660. There is no gag order on the settlement, and Monsanto can be sued again if further contamination occurs. Schmeiser believes this precedent-setting agreement ensures that farmers will be entitled to reimbursement when their fields become contaminated with Roundup Ready canola or any other unwanted GMO plants. Percy Schmeiser is a Canadian farmer from Bruno, Saskatchewan. He took over the family farm in 1947 when he was only 16. He and his wife Louise are known in the prairies as seed savers. Over 50 years, they developed a canola variety that was resistant to disease, and they lost their life's work through contamination by Monsanto's genetically modified canola. Come back when TUC Radio returns to hear Percy Schmeiser and UC Berkeley microbiologist Ignacio Chapella. They talk about the proteins, viruses, bacteria, and pesticides that are incorporated into GMO seeds, plants, and the food prepared with them. And while we are raising awareness of the risks of GMO food, the next phase of genetic engineering is rolling in: GMO microbes, fish and other animals, and Terminator seeds. This program was recorded in November 2006 in Ukiah, California, and updated in February 2012. Find out how to order a copy of Monsanto vs. Percy Schmeiser on CD or DVD by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation or CD order keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. You can get your CD by mail or credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.